Welcome to Open World Chat. I am your host, Jim Dandino, and joined as always by John Odom. Say hi, John.
Hi, John. Ha! I had to do that eventually, right? You say it every time, and you know, really it's a setup.
Only a matter of time, and I knew that it was coming.
That's
and
right.
We are rejoined today by Mark Card, and we are here to talk about Captain America, flag characters in general, and how comic books and our superheroes reflect the complicated patriotism of their time. Welcome, Mark.
Hi. Hi. It's always great to be here. You guys are interesting and entertaining and really informative. It's just great to talk about comics as popular culture as a kind of a deeper topic. It's always great.
Well, and anytime we get a chance to talk about Captain America, it's always a fun chance for me to talk about that time when Mark Gruenwald was writing it and he turned the Serpent Society into a labor union.
Wait, I don't remember this. So,
a fun story. At the beginning of Gruenwald's Captain America run, which was my first pandemic deep dive, I'm reading it and I'm watching the Serpent Society sit down and talk about basically forming a supervillain mutual aid society. And I'm reading the dialogue and I'm like, hang on a second. This is the Comics Guild meeting from 1978, where I think it was Gil Kane blew up the initial attempt to create a labor union for comic writers and artists. And I checked with Sean Howe on Twitter, the author of Marvel Comics, The Untold Story, and he confirmed for me that it is pretty much word for word folks' understanding of what happened in that meeting with, I think, Constrictor blowing up the union out of self-interest. And I have adored the Gruenwald run of Captain America ever since that specific moment in time. But it is also an interesting one because it's the place where U.S. Agent was introduced. And the politics of Captain America were very complicated in that. So, Mark, can you tell us a little bit more about like your understanding of how flag characters like Captain America kind of hold a mirror up to patriotic society of their time?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. People look at this topic kind of casually. They see somebody like Captain America or Captain Britain as just a defense of the status quo. And that's exactly what, you know, Captain America really started out as. But boy, does it evolve all the way through the history of American foreign policy. It is crazy how much he evolves. So if you just look at his main rival early in the run is Red Skull. Well, Red Skull's a Nazi, obviously, until, of course, they're Red Scare, in which case they flip him immediately to turning into a communist. Now, the interesting thing about that is that it reflects the real world in an incredible way. What did all the Nazis do when they became East Germany? They became committed communists. Now, the interesting thing to me about Captain America is that even if you just look at the original run in the 40s, Captain America, he's a total outsider everywhere he goes, everything he does. In the Army, he didn't fit in. Either he wasn't a combatant at all when they first, you know, had him selling war bonds, or he was a super soldier and could do more stuff and more, you know, had more roles than other soldiers. Even then, he didn't make any friends. He had the Howling Avengers, not the Howling Avengers, Howling Commandos.
They were howling either way.
Yeah. And he just doesn't have very many friends. His real only personal connection besides Bucky is Peggy. And that's it. It's interesting how he reflects America from the 40s, where America can't do anything wrong because we're fighting fascism, to the 50s, which is a terribly unsuccessful run in the comics, as I understand it. Then he takes a hiatus for 10 years and comes back in the 60s. But the interesting thing to me, that the thing that I found when I was watching the MCU movies, is that after he wakes up after 70 years in the ice, and I know they do that in the comics too, he's experienced incredible personal loss. Bucky's gone, presumed dead. Peggy is old. And he never had that promise that the relationship with with Peggy had before the war. That promise was never fulfilled and probably would never be fulfilled as far as he knew. And he's lost his own identity. He missed Vietnam. He missed Watergate. And the world is different. It's moved on. It's gone. And so he's lost that. He's lost everything except for one thing. And we can get into the debate about this, but he's lost his moral. I mean, he's kept his moral center.
And I think what I found really interesting about the first movie is I think it's one of the best Superman movies of all time, because instead of making him patriotic, they make him, it feels like his morality is separate from his patriotism in the movie. Right. You know, whereas, you know, early Cap, you know, his morality, his moral code is closely tied to his identity as, you know, America's premier super soldier. And that definitely changes, especially as the comics go on, right? Like at one point, Red Skull is Secretary of State, I think, Del Rusk. Which, like, I see what you're doing.
Yeah, why didn't anybody catch that, by the way?
Right? But like the movies, I think, sidestep that conversation. And it isn't really a going concern in MCU, right? Captain America is just a name. You know, he does in the first movie, because it's World War II and the morality of World War II is presented as fairly black and white. They can be a little bit more straightforward about his patriotism. But the second movie is, you know, a 70s spy thriller where the government is the bad guys, right? But it's not, you know, they have the Hydra and S.H.I.E.L.D. Cutouts to keep him a step away from having to directly address the patriotism issue.
And wait a minute. Doesn't Avengers happen before Winter Soldier?
Yes, Avengers does happen before Winter Soldier.
It's in Avengers that he says, whoa, hang on, wait a minute, because he finds out that they're using the Tesseract to make weapons. And that's where he goes, hang on, maybe the institution is not what I should be loyal to. Maybe it's the ideas. See, for me, in the movies, Captain America makes a shift from ideology to ideas. So he rejects the ideology that he grew up in because it's not there anymore. It's different. The world's corrupted. The world's less. The world's not at its standard. But in both of those movies, he comes to realize that there might be something deeper here to be more loyal to. And I think that really plays out in Civil War and Infinity War. The most interesting thing to me, the best quote of dialogue from the movies comes in the Avengers when he first wakes up. He says, I went under, we were at war. I come back, they say we won, but they didn't say what we lost. And that's the lever right there. That's the first place that he begins to see that patriotism might be better if it's loyalty to an idea and not loyalty to an institution or a person. And that gets really brought home when he finds out that S.H.I.E.L.D. is really Hydra. And I think that's really what one of the can I plug a YouTube channel?
Of course.
There's a YouTube channel called The Take, and they do deep explorations into characters and movies and directors, interesting stuff. And they did it's about 25 minutes on Captain America and his evolution. And they said in the movies, what happens with Cap is he moves from patriot to insurrectionist. And that's not a good word to use in current context, because
there are some of those.
Yes, but it really changes him when all of that starts happening. And then he realizes, I think, in Ultron, that you can't really trust any institutions, because anybody with too much power is too much power. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter if it's AI, the internet. It doesn't matter if it's a government. It doesn't matter if it's S.H.I.E.L.D. So you might need to be more loyal to an idea rather than an ideology.
So movie Captain America is an anarcho-syndicalist.
Pretty much.
All right. I dig it.
You know, as they've developed the character in the MCU, I mean, the first movie notwithstanding, you know, they draw from the Grunwald and Brubaker runs, really. And that's an interesting choice, and how it played out was an interesting choice. I mean, the first one was, you know, rah-rah Rocketeer style, Rocketeer director film. And they could have continued that. That would have been the safe thing to do. But instead, they added all the elements you're talking about. But what is amazing to me is that there was no backlash, at least that I was aware of. And everything that anybody does that is vaguely moving a superhero character, pointing leftward at all, creates this huge backlash.
Yeah.
And you could say, well, he's a white male, so they didn't care. And maybe that's true. But on the other hand, I think there's examples we could come up with where that quality makes them care more.
Oh, no, I would agree with that completely. Yeah.
So what's up with that? Why did Captain America get a pass?
I think that there are factors outside of the patriotism discussion that factored into that. The backlash I saw to Winter Soldier, and I will concede, I think Winter Soldier is widely considered one of the three or four best MCU movies, right?
Best. So
the backlash,
for my money, it's the best. It's number one for me.
It is. It's my favorite too. But
all right, you know, consensus.
I think.
Thanks for joining us today.
I've seen cases made for Black Panther, and I think Black Panther is certainly great. I think that Endgame does a lot of things. I don't know that how it stands as a movie, but Endgame does a lot of things that made me happy. But I think the backlash that came for Winter Soldier was less about the patriotism and more about the beating of the secret society dead horse, right? If you think back to when Winter Soldier came out, we had just come off of Dark Knight, which had the plot where the Joker wanted to get captured to, you know, activate his secret complicated plan. You had Star Trek Into Darkness, which did the same thing. You had all of these, Skyfall did the same thing. You have all of these movies that had like that kind of secret society with a deep plan that blew up everything that you knew about the hero. And I think the backlash came because of the overuse of the similar plot points rather than the actual content of the plot.
That's interesting. You know, the Russo brothers pattern Captain America, the Winter Soldier on 3 Days of the Condor. Mm-hmm. That was their model for it. I want to make a couple of points that I think are interesting about this whole transformation and how he goes from Super Patriot, you know, the original title of this character was Super American, to Insurgent. Who is it that really helps him in that transition from in the MCU movies? What character helps him make that transition from, you know, I used to think that it was all about ideology, and now it goes from ideas?
Black Widow.
Yeah, it's Black Widow. It's the former communist who had to figure all this stuff out, you know, when communism fell. Here's the other thing. So they make a big deal about how Captain America's primary weapon is defensive, his shield. Now, here's one that I thought of, and I don't know, you know, I doubt it was purposeful, but you never know. So at the end of Civil War, he puts down the shield. And that's the symbol that he's done with ideology and now wants to be loyal to ideas, a moral center, a search for justice. Who is it that gives him the shield back?
Sam.
T'Challa.
Oh, he does. You're right. God.
Get that man a shield. So I don't know if that's purposeful symbolism, but it's pretty big symbolism on its own, I think. I think it stands.
And it's a shield that he's...
That's right. It's a shield. Mm-hmm. So I think it's pretty interesting. I haven't read all the way through the comics, so I don't know. But in the movies, it's pretty nuanced. His change is pretty nuanced.
It is more nuanced than I remember. These are all good points. I mean, it has been a while since I've watched any of them because, you know, the struggle for content is real and we got to keep up with everything. Even the shitty ones, Moon Knight. Excuse me.
All bad.
I hated it. It was so bad.
I hated the last episode. That's all.
I haven't even watched it yet. I was so bored by the first four that I just checked out. But I think in the comics, right, you see a similar shift because he's thawed out by Tony in 60s Avengers. But almost immediately after that, the Avengers shift to Cap's Kooky Quartet, where he's got mm-hmm. Quicksilver, Scarlet Witch, and Hawkeye, who are all ex-criminals or supervillains that are, and they're the ones who kind of bring him into the modern era at that point. And his politics get way more complicated in the 70s, you know, with the nomad identity and stuff like that. But like, it is really, it's the villains who bring him into the modern age. And in a time where I think with the backlash from Wortham from the 50s, I think that that's, you know, that they probably could not outright have Soviet communists helping Cap acclimate to the real world on page, but doing it with supervillains is probably their next best analog, yeah. Right?
Yeah, that having Black Widow help him make that transition in the movies is a result of the post-communist world, the post-Soviet world. Yeah. But it's interesting because it makes sense. You know, her entire world collapses in Budapest, and she finds somebody who can help. And what I think is interesting is that closeness with Cap and Black Widow goes all the way through the rest of the films. Because remember, at the end, in Endgame, she and Cap are the only ones holding them together. And so I just think that was kind of a neat twist that they made her the key transition.
Just in terms of nuance, just an aside, you know, in the comics, it's not nuanced at all. You know, I mean, Watergate comes along, hell with this. I'm not Captain America anymore. You know, the government says, okay, we own you. You're going to do what we say. He says, the hell with this. I'm not going to be Captain America anymore. And it's a favorite example to point to when people complain now, you know, again, on the right, politics are in my comics. What are politics doing in my comics? It's like, geez.
Well, it's pretty clear they haven't read the comics. They have no clue what they're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Star Trek. Well, I don't want politics in my Star Trek either.
You know, we went an episode without mentioning Star Trek last time. Yeah. It was amazing. I couldn't believe it. I actually felt a little hollow inside.
Yeah, well, that's
it. We have to dedicate an entire episode to Strange New Worlds at some point in the near future then, I think, because it's very good.
Yeah, it is. Strange New Worlds versus Discovery. There, even better. I made it.
Oh, I don't want to fight with you again. I don't want to argue with you. This is
come on, it's the internet. Consensus doesn't count.
I know, but like, but why can't people just like things, right? Like, why do I have to defend myself? I like Discovery. It's good. It's happy. It's people being nice to each other. It's Parks and Rec in space, right? Like, come on.
Well, you know, it's interesting you said that. I think the the latter MCU movies, the ones directed by the Russos, reflects their time in Community.
Oh yeah, totally. Absolutely does.
It's just, I mean, their evolution is the same evolution that you see in the movies. I mean, people did not take them seriously. They were just these simple, silly sitcom directors and producers, and now they're huge directors.
They get whatever they want. They get Netflix throwing money at them.
And I think that's the reason why they were a good choice, is because they were able to show this group of misfits in Community come together as a family. And that's essentially what happens in the MCU. I mean, especially after the first Avengers movie when Coulson is dead. So they really tend to build that up. It's kind of funny you were mentioning this is just an aside, going back to the original conversation about the labor union or evil people. That reminded me of Joss Whedon and Dr. Singalong's horrible blog, the Evil League of Evil.
Yep. Well, and Venture Brothers too. The League of the Guild of Calamitous Intent. That's where, like, you know, the union assigns them. You know, they go to the labor hall and they get their work assignments, and it's a new superhero that they have to be villains with.
Yeah, I didn't mean to take us off track there.
That's okay. Everything's off track here. So if we're going to talk about flag characters, we got to talk about Superman.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Superman, who has this whole different iconography, which, you know, suddenly he was fighting for the American way in the 50s and he wasn't before. Anyways, Mark, how would you contrast the sort of patriotism of Captain America to Superman?
Well, I'll say this right off the bat. They're both outsiders. People don't think of Captain America as an outsider, but even, you know, as I said before, even in World War II, he was different than everyone else. Mm-hmm. He was just this skinny kid from Brooklyn and who couldn't get in. He wasn't good enough to be a soldier. He had to go through an interesting, he had to go through this transformation, and he got it based on his character, not on his, physical attributes. But I think they're a lot more similar than you think. I think Superman stays more the Boy Scout, even though he is as far removed from American culture as he could possibly be in his origin. But I think he stays more committed to the ideology rather than committed to the ideas. I mean, he transforms. He definitely evolves. But fitting in is more important to Superman than fitting in is to Captain America.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
The secret identity, right? The secret identity is more essential to Superman's identity in the comics than Steve Rogers is. Because, even going back to the Gruenwald run, Steve Rogers is a comic artist drawing Captain America comics,
right?
During that era, but it's kind of incidental to the story, right? There's no conflict between Steve Rogers and Captain America.
Well, and he was dating a supervillain, so that goes back to what you were talking about.
He was. Good for him, right? Everyone deserves their everyone deserves their wild phase. But yeah, I think I actually do kind of want to push back on the idea that Superman is not representative of some American ideal, because, he's an immigrant farmer in Kansas, right? Like, who uses his education to build a better life in the big city. That's, for 45, 50 years, that is the quintessential American story, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I wasn't implying that he doesn't reflect American culture. I'm just saying that what I was focusing on is on more of what they have in common. But you're right, the immigrant experience is clearly reflected in Superman. I mean, it's also interesting because it's the immigrant that's assimilated by Americans.
Right.
So, he gets his idea in the of what is, right and wrong and what you should emphasize and what's important to throw away when you, have to focus on this one thing from his humble Midwestern farmer parents. So, if you want to be insidious about it, Superman's indoctrinated, whereas Captain America moves away from that indoctrination.
I don't even know that the most bad faith reading of Superman can come away with. I mean, there's definitely eras of Superman that lend themselves more to the bad faith reading. But I think at his ideal, I don't think there's room for a bad faith or room for a reading of Superman that reads him as indoctrinated by American culture. Right. Because he's all about standing up for the little guy.
Yeah, no, I can see that. I was just applying a little CST, critical Superman theory.
Ooh, watch out. You're going to get defunded.
I don't know. I think standing up for the little guy was kind of an American zeitgeist in the media anyways, and in a lot of cases of the time. But what's interesting is if you take that theory, the melting pot theory that you talk about, and then you bring in something like Red Sun, you've got Superman as this complete totem of behavioralism, right?
Socialist worker hero.
It's just, he's got no agency other than where he grew up, right?
But no, that's not what Red Sun was about. And actually,
that's not fair.
You want a better one is Multiversity, right? Multiversity was a 6-issue comic by Grant Morrison and various artists and I wrote 20,000 words on this. It is the single best thing that I've ever published on the internet. But it's basically what happens when you take key components out of the Superman mythos. And one of them was Masterman. It was not Superman. It was, Superman crashes in the Sudetenland in 1930.
Superman.
Yep. And that whole thing is about how his inherent morality as a character ends up pushing through. And that Masterman is he fails because, you know, you take away his core, like that, the Midwestern upbringing, the salt of the earth, regular parents. And ultimately that's why he fails, but he also recognizes during the story that he is failing and why he is failing. Red Son, I am not a fan of Mark Millar's comic work.
We could have a whole episode about him.
Well,
yeah, that's definitely one I would listen to.
And he's the you think this A on my head stands for France guy, right? He wrote Captain America at his most banal and jingoistic in the Ultimates. But I think for some reason, whenever he touches Superman, he discovers nuance. So anyway, that's just me defending a comic that I should not defend.
So what do we think about the retcon of Isaiah Bradley into the history of Captain America? That's a meaty topic.
Mark, are you familiar?
No, I'm not really familiar. I've done plenty of research, but this is a really big arc. I mean, people don't understand the richness of character arcs in the comics if you're not already deep in that world. I mean, the new Doctor Strange movie. Holy cow! And that's just the very scratching the surface of that whole concept and you know, the layers that you end up with. So go ahead.
Oh, no. And we're going to put a pin in this because we do need to have an episode about how literally everyone making superhero media took all of the wrong lessons from Into the Spider-Verse and decided to make things about the multiverse and not about the characters, which is why we have bad movies like Morbius right now. But that's a separate topic. We will definitely get to that at some point in the future. So Isaiah Bradley was the product of the Super Soldier Tuskegee experiment. He was a Captain America in the MCU. He was a Captain America for a period of time in the 50s, right? During Korea.
Yeah. And he pops up in the Falcon and Winter Soldier series.
Yeah. And his grandson is definitely going to be the Captain America character in Young Avengers when they inevitably get around to making a Young Avengers movie or show. But I think you've got to have something like that, right? Like if you're writing a story that has even a vague connection to America's real history, there's no way that the US government doesn't try and do something like this to marginalized people, right?
Oh, they did.
They do. Yeah. They still do, right? It still happens all the time.
Yeah, and that's not well reflected in the comics, but I will have to say that that has a lot to do with demographics. You know, the Silver Age of comics is all about the youth culture that comes up with the baby boom. And, you know, that's just overwhelmingly white, you know, society.
You know, the folks writing and drawing the comics in the 60s and 70s were definitely closer to, I think, marginalized perspectives that, generally speaking, closer to marginalized perspectives than your average, you know, than your average American working in a factory job or working in an office job. But they were still, like you said, they were still white dudes, but overwhelmingly white dudes.
Well, yeah. And that reflects into the comics as a business venture.
Right.
And so, you know, that's just a reflection of driving the product toward your biggest market, I think. But yeah, I mean, obviously they need to do something with that. I think that's, you know, that's something that could be quite beneficial in terms of both selling comics, but also in reflecting the wider culture, which people don't understand this. That's what the, you know, comics and graphic novels are like any other art. They are supposed to reflect the culture, the larger culture.
Well, and now with comics, basically superhero comics, basically driving the pop culture conversation, it's even more important for them to accurately reflect society. And I thought the first episode of Ms. Marvel was delightful.
I haven't gotten into that one yet.
Oh, you got to check it out. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, I'm sure I will. Yeah.
Definitely worthwhile.
It was fantastic. It's the first MCU thing that I showed my kids. My 4-year-old daughter watched the first episode. My wife and her thought it was great. So hopefully it doesn't get too violent because I'm going to get yelled at when they watch it without me. Why didn't you tell me this is going to happen?
Well, I think the first big cinematic move toward that was Wonder Woman, obviously, in the DC universe.
Yeah. And Wonder Woman being in World War One was an interesting choice. What did you think of that, Mark?
Well, I think it's actually the best place to do it, because World War One is the first time that you have women in the workforce in massive numbers that you did not have since the Civil War. You have to understand, World War One, just how many women ended up single parents as a result of World War One. I think that's the perfect time to put that in, because at home, not on the front, but at home, women were really transforming. And you see that transformation reflected in other more literary pieces of work, like The Great Gatsby. Women are more accepted as a part of society in the culture of the 20s than they were in the early 20th century. And most of that is reflected because, or is a result of, the fact that women had to, let's just add on top of that, the Spanish flu, which killed 1 million Americans.
Right.
Not quite that many, but still, given the size of the population, women had to take a larger role in society, because with the war and with the Spanish flu, there were millions of women who were left with multiple children and had to work. So I think that's a pretty good choice, actually. I don't know that it was purposeful, but
I think the purpose behind it, or at least I seem to remember reading something about it, was that the war was so bleak and pointless that kind of dropping her in the middle of it as a paragon of hope served a useful contrast.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. That's, you know, it's interesting. Saw the movie, what was it, 1917? Is that what it was? The one that's a single take all the way through the movie?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was funny because I was talking to somebody who'd seen it, and they were talking about the scenes when the two guys are in the middle of no man's land. And they were saying, well, there's no way they had that many bodies in no man's land. There's no way it was that grotesque. And I was like, yeah, they are underrepresenting what happened in World War One with no man's land. It was a lot worse than that. And, you know, they didn't show anybody laying on the battlefield after 3 days when they're wounded, not enough to kill them, but they're eventually just going to die or be eaten by animals or any of that stuff. And so this gets back more to the kind of more realistic depiction of historical events. And I just keep thinking about this dealing with Bradley and dealing with the kind of things that we've done to disadvantaged segments of society. You don't see that much here.
Yeah. Does it break the superhero formula to include that much misery and that much bleakness?
I don't know. Ask Mark Miller.
I don't want to ask him that. Good.
So there's one thing. If we're going to talk flag characters, there's a sort of different flavor too. And this is certainly not just done in the comics, but I'm thinking of like American Flag, using the iconography of America for extreme, maybe not so extreme, comments on consumerism, you know, a satirical element to it. I mean, talk a little bit about that. I mean, the power of using American symbolism for, you know, satire and cultural commentary that isn't necessarily restricted to America.
Well, I've got one. It is more restricted to America, but I think it makes sense. Who is Captain America constantly butting heads with in the MCU?
Iron Man.
Tony Stark. And what's Tony Stark the embodiment of?
Hypercapitalism.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was pretty nuanced, kind of, you know, again, it's not the ideology, it's the idea with Captain America. And, you know, Tony Stark's idea is, no, we have to do this because we need some check. We need some institutional check on us. And this is interesting because it gets into the negative side of America with Captain America. No, we know better. We're the exception. It's better for us to have things in our control. That whole idea of American sovereignty is so important that we can show the rest of the world what needs to be done. And that's not terribly reflected well in the MCU, but I think it probably is a little better in other places.
I never really thought of their conflict as one between institutionalist and a revolutionary before. But it kind of is. That does make sense, right? Tony is the incrementalist saying, you know, the system is there's value in the system. We just have to make sure that it's properly regulated.
And guess where he fails?
Properly regulating it.
No, Ultron.
Right.
His belief in the institutions almost ends the world.
Yeah, not great.
I think you can also read that, and this is a more dangerous read, and this is where I think Civil War, you know, it's really engaging, it's thought-provoking, but it does create kind of a false binary that takes you places that you might not want to go, and that's institutionalism versus individualism.
Yeah, this is the big danger with Captain America. This is, you know, it's individualism to the nth degree is what's best going to protect society. Well, individualism to the nth degree is what destroys society. And so, yeah, this, like I said, Captain America is way more nuanced as a character in both the comics and the MCU than anybody really gives it credit for.
And it's fair. Actually, now that I make that criticism, I think that also was unfair, just as I'm talking through it, because you know, Captain America does make that statement in the end, you know, my faith is in the individual, but he's also the one who is struggling to find the line in that movie where Tony Stark, there's no struggle. This is the way it is. And you know, he almost signs the accords and then he doesn't. So now that I open my mouth and say that, I'm questioning myself. He may have been more the audience character than just emblematic of a certain perspective.
You know, it's interesting. You would think that libertarians would try to snatch up Captain America.
Well, that's what I was thinking, yeah.
But they're not.
Too late.
Yeah, well, yeah.
We got
Well, it's interesting. We're talking about the dangerous side of it. And you mentioned that Superman has this whole ethos of defend the little guy. Yeah, that got us in trouble with Vietnam. We thought we were defending the little guy. And in some ways, we were defending the little guy. But where did it lead us?
Oh.
Well, I'm not sure I would characterize Vietnam that way, but that's also
Well,
another
no.
episode.
I'm not sure I would
Some people
personally. But, you know, is there really any reckoning of Vietnam in the MCU? Because, I
I
mean,
feel like on the MCU, I was thinking about the comics and
no,
everything.
I'm talking
Oh,
about the comics.
so.
I misspoke.
Mark, the comics timescale in the Marvel Universe, the generally accepted idea is that the Marvel Universe has only been in existence for like 15 years
Okay.
on a rolling basis, right? So, like, you know, for a little while it was Iraq instead of
Right.
Vietnam. And I think they just did something like 2 years ago where they added in basically a whole fake Vietnam for like the Punisher and for Iron Man because their origins are so tied to our foreign adventures in the 50s and 60s
Right.
that they needed to update it. I can't remember what the new one is though, and it's killing me. I should know this.
Well, in the MCU, what comes to mind is the Ten Rings.
Right.
And not and that in it's been both its Middle Eastern and East Asian manifestations. You know, you got Iron Man 3 and the whole fake
Big
Mandarin,
Mandarin.
which is, you know, run by the Ten Rings. And then you've got, you know, with
Shang-Chi.
yeah, Shang-Chi, then it becomes more East Asian. So it's just that we don't really see much of that pushback from foreign interventions that failed.
Yeah, and they've moved to way more cosmic things, I think,
Yeah.
now, so that the
Well, that might be a good way to avoid Vietnam too.
Yeah. There's a problem on Galador, and we got it fixed, right?
Can we talk about Galador now?
Galador is in the Marvel Universe. It
No,
just
I know, but that's the Space Knights, right?
Yes,
Can
the only
we just
space
can't
knight
talk about Rom. That's right.
Rom is the only one that is
Rom
not
is the
there.
only one. Of
Yes,
course. All right, now I remember.
but Galador was one of the planets destroyed by the builders in Hickman's Avengers. I think. I don't know.
I have a
Now
hard
I'm all
time
turned around.
tracking that. That was
Oh,
such a complicated series.
it was so good. It was.
It
Oh,
was good.
it was fantastic. I'm a massive Jonathan Hickman stan. And his Avengers was object. I've said this before. Objectively, a terrible Avengers comic because the Avengers were the bad guys and they did not realize it. However, it was an amazing Fantastic Four story.
That's
So,
true.
I think I might have come up with a reason why popular comics don't deal with Vietnam. I think it was pretty definitively dealt with in Watchmen.
Yeah.
Probably.
well, in the movies, I guess you've got, I believe that's Wolverine's past is enmeshed in Vietnam, I think.
Wolverine fought the Civil War too.
Yeah.
Right. Like Wolverine had time in the Civil War. Wolverine had time in World War II.
Yeah, but in the films, they make a statement about atrocities, I think.
The second one, the good one that nobody thinks is good, was he was in Japan during World War II. He jumped into a well to avoid the bomb.
I really like that movie, by the way.
I liked it too. No, but don't we flash back to Vietnam in The Bad One, where he breaks with his buddies?
Yes.
Is that Vietnam? I think that's Vietnam.
It might be Central America.
Oh, God, maybe it is. I'm going to have to edit out this whole thing. I don't know what I'm talking about.
I think the world needs to reckon with just how terrible X-Men Origins Wolverine was.
Well, Is that even in dispute anymore? I think we've reckoned it's time to move on and pretend it didn't happen.
Every couple of years, somebody tries to give it a critical reassessment and say, well, it can't be bad. It wasn't real bad. No, it was real bad, dude. Sorry. It was extremely bad. It's a very stupid movie. Yeah. Mark, thank you so much for joining us again. It was a delight having you.
It's always fun. All right, guys. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mark.